Welcome to the conversation.org, making sense of these times web radio program.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great. With a click.
You're listening to our series of Suzanne's readings from Brian Swim's The Universe is a Green Dragon. We would love to hear from you. Email us at suzanne@mightycompanions.org. And now, here she is, Suzanne Taylor.
Well, here we are, gathered around the campfire for part two of The Universe is a Green Dragon, involved in this ecstatic experience together. Well, I'm ecstatic. And I hope you are too. This book, beyond all others, just sends me into what we read before, where the universe is one incredible event that started somewhere and is still going on. Quote, a single energetic event, a whole, a unified, multiform, and glorious outpouring of being. So here we are, not just little creatures on this dead rock thing, but part of a live, dynamic event. This is us. And us, to go back to the previous reading, I like this so much in terms of the fact that we are in a new story here. This is what's important about this book. This book is the skeleton or the umbrella of the new story in which we can experience ourselves, me, you, very differently. When we understand and feel and incorporate into our very being these dynamics that Brian Swim has so brilliantly discerned. You know, he's a very original thinker. At some level, what he's presenting is new science, where we know things, we all know things now that we didn't know 100 years ago. And that gives us the background, like the landscape in which we can see the drama of human existence. But beyond that, Brian sees with an original thinker's eyes, what do these things mean? What are the metaphors that bring them alive in yourself? And there's nobody writing like Brian is writing. He gets this from his mentor, Thomas Berry. He gets a lot of the thought processes, and he's always thanking him, and I think we all have Thomas Berry to thank for the overarching umbrella who brought these concepts to us. But Brian has taken off from there to animate these things. So as I said, I was going to go back and pick up a little piece from the previous reading where he says, I sometimes think the primary deed of a parent is to see the beauty and grace of children. Children are magnificent, gorgeous beyond telling. They themselves have no idea what beauty they embody. Can you see the tragedy of a child with no one to feel and cherish its beauty? No one to fall in love with this magnificent creature? No one to celebrate its splendor? So just think, if each of us was born into this glorious, as in some sense we are, the baby is so appreciated, but is it treated thenceforth as the crowning achievement of the universe? If our first memories were of our parents treating us as the great achievement, the greatest achievement that the universe had come to that moment, just think. How would you feel about yourself? Compare that to whatever message you got as the kind of foundational idea of who you are from those power creatures, your parents. Well, we're going to go on to read a section called Allurement. Now, the first section under the grand part one of this three-part drama, Cosmos' primary revelation. In other words, we are in an event that started somewhere and is continuing to explode. And under that, we read the first of the four parts, four, five, three, whatever. But the first part was creativity, primordial and pervasive, where everything is this energy of making more of itself and discovering all the time and opening to more. And now he's going to go on to develop another theme of what is going on in the macrocosm, in the whole situation of life. So we've got creativity feeding us all the time, impelling us, inspiring us, pouring forth from us. And he ends this section on creativity, giving us a clue to the next section, "What is our fullest destiny?" youth asked. And Thomas the Sage said, "To become love in human form." And Thomas talks about the journey out of emptiness is the creation of love. And youth is asking him, what does he mean by love? But now Brian will show us how the universe is full of creativity and how it's full of love. Not just that it is, but he's going to develop science and love. And the section is called Allurement. It starts with Thomas. In order to approach love, we must start with our common context, the emerging universe in which we find ourselves. This realm of existence is our ultimate home. All beings, including humans, have this home in common. If we want to learn anything, we must start with the cosmos, the earth, and life forms. So we're inside this whole thing. That's our playing field, says Brian. And Thomas goes on to say about love, how it enters this system. Love begins as allurement, as attraction. Think of the entire cosmos, all 100 billion galaxies. Oh my God, that's me. How can this be? Can you imagine 100 billion galaxies? Galaxies, each of which have, now I always forget the numbers, 30 billion stars, 300 billion stars. Well, close, maybe no cigar. Okay. Think of the entire cosmos, all 100 billion galaxies rushing through space. At this cosmic scale, the basic dynamism of the universe is the attraction each galaxy has for every other galaxy. Nothing in all science has been established and studied with greater attention and detail than this primary attraction of each part of the universe for every other part. And youth, smarty guy, says, the attraction is love? Thomas, start here. On the cosmic scale, an attraction exists. Smarty youth again, but isn't that gravity? Thomas, gravity is the word used by scientists and the rest of us in the modern era to point, he has that italicized, to point to this primary attraction. Listen carefully and I'll clarify my point. For 300 years, the word gravity meant Newton's theory of gravity. Then Einstein published his own relativistic theory of gravity, so that in our time, a scientist can think of gravity as being Einstein's theory. The subtle mathematical differences between Newton's and Einstein's theories of gravity are crucial. But both were attempts to say something intelligent about why rocks fall to Earth. Before and after any theory, there is the ultimate mystery of the falling rock and the revolving Earth. The mystery remains, no matter how intelligently we theorize. Do you see? Youth says, I don't think so. Thomas says, all right. If a rock is dropped, why does it move toward the Earth? Youth says, because of gravity. Thomas, and what is gravity? Youth, a basic force. It pulls things. Thomas, what is doing the pulling? And again, he has this italicized. So we're pointing to something we're never going to be able to describe or know. No, we can describe, but we can't know. We can describe what happens, but we can't know where it comes from. Okay, we're back in the book now. Youth, there's just this pulling, that's all. It's just there. Thomas, that's right. An attracting activity. This attracting activity is a fundamental mystery. Youth, but it's when we understand. Thomas, we understand details concerning the consequences of this attraction. We do not understand the attracting activity itself. Years after Isaac Newton wrote out his equations of the universal law of gravitation, he was still wondering aloud, whence is it that the sun and planets gravitate toward one another? That's in quotes. We can never penetrate into the basic fact of this attraction, nor determine why it operates at all. Do you see that the universe might just as well have been different? Might have included no attracting activity. But the fact is that our galaxy is attracted by every other galaxy in the universe. And our galaxy attracts every other galaxy. The attracting activity is a stupendous and mysterious fact of existence, primal. We awake and discover that this alluring activity is the basic reality of the macrocosmic universe. Youth, are you saying that this attraction is love? Thomas, the difficulty with the word love is that it's been ruined recently. For the last few centuries, the fundamental referent for our language was the human world. We have tried to live in the anthropocentric frame of reference and have thereby crippled many of our concepts and words. When we hear the word love, we think only of human love, a very special sort of love. So I am certainly not saying that gravity is human love. I am saying that if we are going to think about love in its cosmic dimension, we must start with the universe as a whole. We must begin with the attraction that permeates the entire macrostructure. I'm speaking precisely of the basic binding energy found everywhere in reality. I'm speaking of the primary allurement that all galaxies experience for all other galaxies. So here's Suzanne again. You realize that Brian's word allurement, he's already pulling us into a kind of metaphorical feeling tone that is his translation of this basic binding energy found everywhere in reality. Why not call it allurement? Allurement is something that means we're attracted. But it's in ourselves. We can feel this allurement. It's a human thing we feel as allurement. So here we are. Brian is taking us into ourselves being as everything so that we feel it and know it and become it. I'm going on with Thomas here. Thomas says, I'm speaking precisely of the basic binding energy found everywhere in reality. I'm speaking of the primary allurement that all galaxies experience for all other galaxies. Youth, how does this connect with human love then? Thomas, tell me something you enjoy doing. Youth, listening to music. Thomas, yes. Now watch. We cannot give any explanation for liking music. We simply enjoy music of certain sorts. The attraction is primal. You have awakened to existence and discovered this attraction. Is it clear now that your attraction, your interest and enjoyment are ultimate mystery? Youth, I'm beginning to see. Thomas, there are so many sounds in the world, and yet a very particular sort of sound interests you most deeply. Why should this be? Why not any of the other infinite number of sounds? Why music, above all? Well, that is unanswerable. Just as Newton never pretended to be able to say why the sun attracts the earth. The strangest thing is that this alluring activity permeates the cosmos on all levels of being. These allurements permeating you and everyone and everything else are fundamentally mysterious. You are interested in certain things. Certain people, certain activities. Each interest is as fundamental to the universe as is the gravitational attraction our Earth feels for the sun. We cannot explain why these attractions exist. We can only become aware of them. Am I making myself clear? Youth. Yes, but it seems that maybe we can explain them. For instance, listening to music is relaxing. Maybe that's why humans, Thomas interrupts, when you first listened to some music you really liked, did you think, this is the sort of music that will relax me? Well, no, says youth, Thomas. You discovered that you were drawn to the music, true? Such experiences of interest are the roots of love. You are simply attracted to something or someone, to some activity. You don't find reasons for this attraction until after the fact. Then you come up with reasons. The Earth does not think, well, it'll be a good thing to be attracted to the sun. That way humans can warm their tea in black bags and save on electricity. The Earth is simply attracted. The electron is simply attracted. The galaxy is simply attracted. You are simply attracted. This mysterious attraction that we call interest or fascination is as mysterious, as basic, as the allurement that we call gravitation. You. So what you're saying is, a galaxy exists within attraction, and so do I. Thomas, the great mystery is that we are interested in anything whatsoever. Think of your friends, how you first met them, how interesting they appear to you. Why should anyone in the whole world interest us at all? Why don't we experience everyone as utter, unendurable bores? Why isn't the cosmos made that way? Why don't we suffer intolerable boredom with every person, forest, symphony, and seashore in existence? The great surprise is the discovery that something or someone is interesting. Love begins there. Love begins when we discover interest. To be interested is to fall in love. To become fascinated is to step into a wild love affair on any level of life. Now, those are hot lines. Love begins when we discover interest. Now, Brian's going to map us right into ourselves being permeated by this wonderful feeling. And after all, what are we but feeling? And we're going to get there through this masterful storyteller, this magician. Love begins when we discover interest. To be interested is to fall in love. To become fascinated is to step into a wild love affair on any level of life. Okay, here we go. Thomas goes on. Then we discover not only that we are interested, but that our interests are entirely our own. We awake to our unique sets of attractions. So do oxygen atoms. So do protons. The proton is attracted only to certain particles. On an infinitely more complex level, the same holds true for humans. Each person discovers a field of allurements, the totality of which bears the unique stamp of that person's personality. Destiny unfolds in the pursuit of individual fascinations and interests. Youth. But it almost sounds self-centered. Where do others fit in? Thomas, by pursuing your allurements, you help bind the universe together. The unity of the world rests on the pursuit of passion. Surprised? Are you surprised, dear listeners? The unity of the world rests on the pursuit of passion. Well, that may be the hottest line in the book. Oh, I always think that when I come to the most recent hottest line. Well, gives us our task, you know. No sitting back, no taking a pass, no being bored. Please. The unity of the world rests on the pursuit of passion. So Thomas goes on, surprised, let's experiment. Bring to mind all the allurements filling the universe of whatever complexity or order. The allurement we call gravitation, that of electromagnetic interactions, chemical attractors, allurements in the biological and human worlds. Here's the question. If we could snap our fingers and make these allurements, which we can't see or taste or hear anyway, disappear from the universe, what would happen? To begin with, the galaxies would break apart. The stars of the Milky Way would soar off in all directions, since they would no longer hold each other in the galactic dance. Their spiraling arms would disintegrate as stars made their chaotic ways into intergalactic space. Individual stars would disperse as well, their atoms no longer attracting each other, but wandering off in all directions. Releasing core pressure and thereby shutting down fusion reactions, the stars would go dark. The Earth would break apart as well, all the minerals and chemical compounds dissolving, mountains evaporating like huge dark clouds under the noon sun. And even if the physical world retained its shape, the human world would disintegrate just the same. No one would go to work in the morning. Why should they? There would be no attraction for the work, no matter what it was. Activity would cease. Did scientists once find the universe interesting, staying up nights to reflect on its mysteries? No longer. Did lovers chase each other in the night, abandoning all for the adventure of romance? Never again. All interest, enchantment, fascination, mystery, and the wonder would fall away. And with their absence, all human groups would lose their binding energy. Galaxies, human families, atoms, ecosystems, all disintegrating immediately as the allurement pervading the universe is shut off. Nothing left. No community of any sort. Just nothing. Youth. That's an amazing experiment. Thomas. It underlines the primary result of all allurement, which is the evocation of being, the creation of community. Oh, isn't this an interesting idea, says Suzanne. Now, from allurement, which is just there, can't explain it, can only experience it, and look where we're going to go. We're going to go from our own aliveness into our interconnection. We're going to build a world of oneness. Thank you, Brian. All right, I'm going to go on with Thomas. All communities of being are created in response to a prior mysterious alluring activity. Okay? Allurement evokes being and life. That's what allurement is. Now you can understand what love means. Love is a word that points to this alluring activity in the cosmos. This primal dynamism awakens the communities of atoms, galaxies, stars, families, nations, persons, ecosystems, oceans, and stellar systems. Love ignites being. Think of the power of this alluring activity, its immensity. We are barely able to keep our cars puttering about the continent. What would we say if we had the job of getting the stars to rotate and revolve around the galaxies? What if we had to keep all the hydrogen atoms together or keep them pressed into stars? Think of the tremendous galactic tasks performed every instant by this universe, and you will begin to feel the magnificence of the cosmic allurement of love. It is this allurement that excites lovers into chasing each other through the night, that pulls the parent out of bed for the third time to comfort a sick child, that draws humans into lifetimes of learning and developing. The excitement in our hand, as it tears open a letter from a friend, is the same dynamism that spins our vast earth through the black night and into the rosy colors of dawn. Youth. So this alluring activity is love? Thomas. Yes, the activity of allurement, which is simultaneously the activity of igniting being and enhancing life. So it's the activity of allurement, says Suzanne to you, that love is. Now look where he's gotten us, from this little force that's everywhere, everything, and all of a sudden we're feeling, oh, this is love, this force that is in everything that I'm feeling even now. To go on with Brian, youth, is alluring the same as evoking? Thomas, consider the star. The star's development indicates clearly how allurement and evocation of being are a single dynamism. Imagine a vast dark cloud of hydrogen atoms stretching through millions of miles of space. Each of these trillions upon trillions of atoms is involved in an attracting activity for all the rest, and slowly begins to move. A common center emerges, and the hydrogen atoms begin to clump together. The growing pressure from the gravitational attraction enables the hydrogen atoms to fuse into helium atoms, thus releasing their hidden energy in a vast profusion of light, emanating in all directions. The core of a star ignites. All of this activity is the result of the cosmic allurement of gravitation. First we had a black cloud of hydrogen atoms. Now we have a stellar brilliance radiating through intergalactic space to the farthest reaches of the cosmos. We had only hydrogen. Now we have the star. You see? The allurement of gravitation evoked the being of the star. The hydrogen atoms responded to this allurement and showed their deeper potentiality as elements of a raging star. Only by responding to allurement could the depths be shown and the being of the star come forth. Now this section, folks, I have marked, wow, with a star. You said, and the same holds for humans? Thomas, the same holds for you, yes. You do not know what you can do or who you are in your fullest significance or what powers are hiding within you. All exists in the emptiness of your potentiality, a realm that cannot be seen or tasted or touched. How will you bring these powers forth? How will you awaken your creativity? By responding to the allurements that beckon to you, by following your passions and interests. Alluring activity draws you into being, just as it drew the star into being. Our life and powers come forth through our response to allurement. Well, isn't this Joseph Campbell, Follow Your Bliss? And here we have the underpinning, says Suzanne, this is not Brian, what is that bliss stuff? Ah, it's the fundamental force of the universe. This is hot, and we're hot. To go on, youth. No matter what allurement, Thomas had said, our life and powers come forth through our response to allurement. Youth, no matter what allurement, Thomas, that's right. Youth, how about reading Shakespeare? What would that pursuit evoke? Thomas, if you read deeply and are drawn into the dramas, you will ignite previously unsuspected capacities for being. You will evoke a spaciousness where the feelings of the human world can live. Plunge into the life of the plays, and one day you will be startled by the discovery of feelings you had not known before. An affection for the human condition, for the frailties of the human will, for the nobility of spirit that wells up in every generation, no matter how difficult the circumstances of suffering and disillusionment. You asked about the others, how they fit in. Do you see now? A journey into Shakespeare's works enables you to enter more fully the complex relationships within the human world. You may abide more deeply in these relationships, precisely because the ontological space within yourself has been opened up by the power of Shakespeare's language. You will enter relationships in a subtler manner because your awareness has been opened. More of the world will be present to you. What was formerly invisible now shows itself. That's what we mean by saying your being has been aroused, activated, awakened, and evoked. And what I want to say, Suzanne, is that this is a beautiful argument for us needing one another. The alternative to the argument that says, oh, I don't need to read anything, it's all inside myself. Well, yes, and the allurement is the attraction back and forth. And since we're all in this together, we can be permeated by the beauty of others. What an arrogance to think that the only thing that can ignite us is ourselves. What a limitation. Brian is giving us the whole enchilada here. All right, so Thomas goes on, and this is the end of this section that we're on, the last couple paragraphs. Thomas says, pursue these interests further, and you will learn what guided English society, ancient Roman society, and medieval Italian society. Led into an understanding of the way in which the past lives in our present world, you will begin to see how contemporary patterns of activities are shaped by the history of the West. You will carry within yourself the complexity of the world in a manner unimaginable to your previous self. You will know that you are not disconnected from the life of the world, nor from struggling humanity in all its difficulties throughout the planet. You will learn the first glimmer of the profound manner in which humans bind together the entire social order through a heightened awareness of what it means to be a compassionate human. I like that. Humans bind together the entire social order through a heightened awareness of what it means to be a compassionate human. This is up to us. This is me and you and our open-heartedness, which holds the whole world in any meaningful sense together. And the section ends with you saying, and that's what you mean when you say that what was invisible is made visible? I mean, all these subtle possibilities for relationships are suddenly noticed, are suddenly made present. You know, it's amazing to think what sort of world this would be if Shakespeare or other poets had not written. But why did they write? Is that allurement or is that something else? Well, I guess it's something else, huh? We're going to go on and read the next section on this particular episode, this installment of the Brian Swim drama. And the next section is called Our Destiny as Enchantment. So we're going from allurement to enchantment. Thomas, your question plunges us into the root of all mystery. We awake to a universe permeated with allurement, and our most primal desire is to become this allurement. We awake to a universe filled with fascination, and our most fundamental urge is to become this fascination. Youth, I don't understand. Thomas, stay with Shakespeare. You are drawn to the works of Shakespeare, say. Through these works, you deepen your sense of community, making the ancient Romans intimately present to you in a new way. Because of these newly evoked creative powers of perception, you enter more effectively into intimate relationship with the people of your own time and place. You appreciate feelings that others might have and intuit their motivations. Thus, you enter into more complex relationships within human groups. All of this from reading and studying Shakespeare. He wrote his plays, and through them, you enter more deeply into being. So, do you see that Shakespeare is inseparably involved with allurement? Do you see that Shakespeare's works are evocations of being? Youth, I'm still somewhat confused. Thomas, the question you asked was, why did Shakespeare write? He wrote because the world enchanted him. He wrote to capture the grandeur, pathos, profundity, and beauty that he experienced in life. Now, isn't that what we all want to do? Just somehow capture the glory of life around us, says Suzanne. And says Thomas, in order to do so, he had to become one with this beauty. How else can we express feelings but by entering deeply into them? See, this is why I love reading this, because when I read this book to you, I can enter deeply into all of these feelings that Brian evokes. Thomas says, how can we capture the mystery of anguish unless we become one with anguish? Aha, says Suzanne, another argument for being your feelings such as they are rather than running from them, rather than denying them. We only attune to this gloriousness by accepting everything, including the parts that we want to shun. So back to Thomas. Shakespeare lived his life stunned by its majesty, and in his writing attempted to seize what he felt, to capture this passion in symbolic form. Lured into the intensity of living, he represented this intensity in language. And why? Because beauty stunned him. because the soul cannot confine such feelings. Shakespeare put himself into writing because by writing he could fascinate others just as the world had fascinated him. He could amuse, astonish, delight, and enchant others just as the world had enchanted him. "Oh, I so feel this way," your friend Suzanne says. "I am so just filled with this desire that we should all be in this glorious soup together. What fun is it to be in it alone? In fact, it doesn't even exist alone. It's the soup of us all." Okay, so Thomas again. Drawn into life by allurement in a thousand different ways, he himself then became alluring. Stunned by the fascination permeating the human order of existence, he in turn fascinated. Youth. This is true for poets most of all, but... Thomas, no, not at all. Consider scientists. Stephen Hawking comes to mind. Here is an astrophysicist fascinated by the primeval fireball, the initial singularity of space-time. He pursued this path further into experiences of order and beauty, of the complexity and simplicity of the universe's earliest moments. So what does he do? He articulates his experience within the languages of English and mathematics. He creates his own magnificent language forms to communicate the beauty he has uncovered, the clarity he has achieved, the insight he has seized. He hopes to capture some of this, luring others into similar moments of seeing, captivating their minds, drawing them more deeply into their own understanding and feeling of the universe. The beauty of his mathematical language is as alluring as Shakespeare's iambic pentameter. Mathematical physics cannot resist the lure of Hawking's creations. They seize the mind as powerfully as Shakespeare's. Do you see what I'm saying? You. That we awake to fascination in some form or another, and that we strive to become fascination. Thomas, yes! We awake to fascination, and we strive to fascinate. We work to enchant others. We work to ignite life, to evoke presence, to enhance the unfolding of being. All of this is the actuality of love. We strive to fascinate so that we can bring forth what might otherwise disappear. But that is exactly what love does. Love is the activity of evoking being, of enhancing life. Well, I got lots of underlines under those last few lines. This is the world in which hopefully we can find ourselves immersed. Ah, what deliverance. Youth asks, "Now, this is human love you are describing." Thomas says, No. You must begin to see this activity as basic to the universe. Consider the star again. So here we are. Brian is not letting us evade the fact that everything in the universe and our own individual private beingness is one and the same. Thomas goes on. Consider the star again. In the core of a star, helium, carbon, oxygen, silicon, all the elements up to iron are created in blazing heat. If a star is of sufficient size, after billions of years it explodes, creating all the rest of the elements, sending them off into the universe. Our own solar system emerged from an exploding supernova, creating the planets and their many elements. Minerals and life forms are created out of supernova explosions. Think about it. When you breathe the creations of a star. All the life you will live is possible because of the gifts of that star. Your life has been evoked through the works of the heavens. Do you see? The star emerges out of its own response to allurement, then evokes the life of others. The air we breathe, the food we eat, the compounds out of which we are composed, all creations of the supernova. Drawn into existence by allurement, giving birth, then drawing others into existence. This is the fundamental dynamism of the cosmos. Now that is a really hot line. Drawn into existence by allurement, giving birth, then drawing others into existence. This is the fundamental dynamism of the cosmos. So we have the Big Bang giving us this energy, and we are it banging away. Drawing others, giving birth ourselves to people. Drawing others into existence, which means our own human birth process. Same as the star birth process. Isn't this wondrous? Thomas goes on. In this we can see the meaning of human life and human work. The star's own adventure captures the whole story. It is created out of the creations of the fireball, enters into its own intense creativity, and sends forth its works throughout the galaxy, enabling new orders of existence to emerge. It gives utterly everything to its task. After its stupendous creativity, its life as a star is over in one vast explosion. But through the bestowal of its gifts, elephants, rivers, eagles, ice jams, root beer floats, zebras, Elizabethan dramas, and the whole living earth become possible. Oh gosh, Brian Swim, can you clone yourself? Look at that passage of all those things that become possible. That's Brian's beautiful imagination. Thomas goes on. Love's dynamism is carved into the principal being of the night sky. Youth, are you saying that the star is aware of what it is doing? Thomas, well, yes and no. But let's think about it a moment. We are the self-reflection of the universe. We allow the universe to know and feel itself. So the universe is aware of itself through self-reflexive mind, which unfurls in the human. We were brought forth so that these experiences of beauty could enter awareness. The primal fireball existed for 20 billion years without self-awareness. The creative work of the supernovas existed for billions of years without self-reflexive awareness. That star could not by itself become aware of its own beauty or sacrifice. But the star can, through us, reflect back on itself. In a sense, you are the star. Look at your hand. Do you claim it as your own? Every element was forged in temperatures a million times hotter than molten rock. Each atom fashioned in the blazing heat of the star. Your eyes, your brain, your bones, all of you is composed of the star's creations. You are that star, brought into a form of life that enables life to reflect on itself. So yes, the star does know of its great work, of its surrender to allurement, of its stupendous contribution to life, but only through its further articulation. You. Youth. So that star is only just now aware of its work? Thomas, yes. In the same way that you become aware of the aspects of yourself that have remained unconscious for years. You've seen pictures of yourself as an infant. When you look at them, you're looking at yourself. The baby then becomes aware of its own beauty. Aren't you the further development of that baby? Well, of course. And yet, the baby seems somehow other than you. So too with the star. We know we are the further development of the star, and yet we know that we are somehow different from the star. The star emerges into self-reflexive awareness of its beauty and creative work through the human mind. The universe is a single, multiform event. There is no such thing as a disconnected thing. Each thing emerged from the primeval fireball, and nothing can remove the primordial link this establishes with every other thing in the universe, no matter how distant. You and everything you do and become are further articulations of the primal fireball. Humans have always been fascinated by genealogical records. We want to know where we came from, the history that leads up to us. But nothing in all genealogical research throughout human history could have prepared us for the truth. Several hundred years or several thousand years of a family tree is nothing. For our common family tree fills the universe. Our kins include the living companions on Earth, all the planets and the stars and every galaxy. Cousins all, we spread out until we fill the whole vast cosmos end to end. The people of the Middle Ages had the right idea in their cherishing of relics. If they could find a splinter of the cross or a garment worn by St. Francis, they venerated the article because it had once been so close to beings of extraordinary significance. This attitude must be extended. Our reverence for the holy must expand to include the whole numinous universe. What are the relics today? We are the relics. The earth and all beings of earth were there in the core of that exploding supernova. We were there in the distant, terrifying furnace of the primeval fireball. Not as mere witnesses either, but as central to the event. Our bodies remember that event, exulting in the majesty of the night sky, precisely because all suffered it together. The planet is a rare and holy relic of every event of 20 billion years of cosmic development. Now I've got stars on, no, hearts, excuse me, and a cheer. It says cheer, underlined exclamation on these next two paragraphs. When we deepen our awareness of the simple truth that we are here through the creativity of stars, we begin to feel fresh gratitude. When we reflect on the labor required for our life, reverence naturally wells up within us. Then, in the deepest regions of our hearts, we begin to embrace our own creativity. What we bestow on the world allows others to live in joy, such a stupendous mystery. Think of it, this supreme dynamic of love, of allurement and evocation in action since the beginning of the universe, after billions of years, becomes aware of itself. Life-enhancing and being-evoking allurement knows itself. The magic of creating life and being now reflects upon its own mystery. What creatures, what living beings, what persons will follow us, entering life and the great mystery of love, precisely because of our work? Yay! That's my cheer section. Thomas goes on. Let's speak here of values. I don't mean the values of modern society or philosophers or the values of the marketplace. I mean cosmic value. What does the cosmos, as the supreme home of all, itself value? Those who awake to the splendor of the universe and ignite life in others. Tell me, are you aware that you and you alone are able to draw forth life in ways that no one else in the universe can? Youth, you mentioned Shakespeare and that astrophysicist. Thomas, my question has nothing to do with them. The universe would never bother to create two Shakespeares. That would only reveal limited creativity. The ultimate mystery from which all beings emerge prefers ultimately extravagance, each being glistening with freshness, ontologically unique, never to be repeated. Each being is required. None can be eliminated or ignored, for not one is redundant. Are you aware of the ways in which you have the power to evoke being? This question probes your destiny as a creative source, your ultimate value. To answer requires that you move more deeply into the primordial dynamism of the universe, for as you ripen into love's activity, you simultaneously enhance the life around you. You know, isn't this something? Brian has filled us so with the privilege of being part of this grandeur. And now he is suggesting, he is guiding, he is leading us to go more deeply into this uniqueness that we are so fortunate that we got here, each of us, because we're the only one of us. And now Brian says where to look for the fruition of that is inside that creative process that is yourself. So he's getting you to align at that deepest level with that most primeval force and power and beauty. Youth says, I don't know where to begin thinking about it. Thomas, begin with your allurements and your own web of relationships. Your allurements draw you into the activity of evoking the life about you. There are persons and creatures all around you that will emerge into an enhanced vitality with a renewed taste for life's adventures only if you pursue your destiny with the same extravagant devotion of the star to its destiny. What a call, isn't that? Oh, I love being called so brilliantly because it really does deliver me. It allows me to deliver myself. Back to Brian Swim, youth. I'm to become like a star, Thomas. In its pursuit of allurement, yes. In its complete immersion in the work at hand. In its identification with the activities of a rousing being, yes. There are so many beings you can emulate. The simplest prokaryotic organisms struggled ceaselessly and with stunning success, altering the nature of the earth permanently. They roamed through life and hatched those seeds of power we call genes. Who could have created them if they had not? We have no talent for that kind of work. We carry their achievements in our bodies. All the hundreds of thousands of genes in our bodies that enable such lambent beauty to delight the planet were handed to us by these primitive creatures. Lambent. Now, I'm going to have to go to my dictionary to look that one up. Thomas goes on to say, your gratitude includes them. Your life emerges through their creativity. Youth, but they didn't know what they were doing. I don't see how I can be grateful to them for their mindless behavior. Thomas, do you know what you are doing? Youth, more than they. Thomas, I would hope so, yes, unless their labor was in vain. But do you know what you are doing? When you find Shakespeare so fascinating? Do you know what's happening in a cosmic sense? Can you explain to me quite simply why humans find mountains magnificent beyond capture in language? Why they risk their lives to be up there on the angular plains of granite? Well, no, not in any ultimate sense. Thomas, then you share the same cosmic ignorance with the microorganisms who created the informed sequences of nucleotides we call genes. Neither you nor they understand why the cosmos should glimmer with beauty, drawing forth our deepest efforts. The simple truth is that we do pursue the fascinating beauty that surrounds us. Can you tell me what will come of your creativity and your destiny? Of course not. Nor could the microorganisms predict the future or speak of the meaning of their labor in any ultimate sense. We are similar in hoping to immerse ourselves in the life-evoking activities that fill the earth. We pursue being and struggle to become one with this enchanting mystery so that we too can contribute to life just as they did. We suffer the withering pains of life in the hopes that we too, just as the stars and the prokaryotes, can enter the adventure of the cosmos and enhance the riches of the universe. Youth, well then how can I learn to become love? Thomas, that is the easiest thing to do in the universe. All that is required is that you fall in love. Fall in love as deeply as you can. That way, the universe becomes your primary teacher. We learn about becoming love by falling in love, then reflecting on the experience and what it taught us. That way, the universe does the real teaching. I'm not talking about secondhand, theoretical, or abstract ideas about love, but immersion in the actuality of love and love's activity. Remember that the desire to make us over into love permeates the universe. We are initiated into love when lured into the intense pursuit of the enchanted lover. If the initiation is long and filled with doubt and suffering, the learning takes hold deeply. Well, isn't that good news, folks? You see, we can all do this. That's what Brian is giving us. He's giving us not the map of some ideal person, but the map of me and you and everyone who can become the ultimate beingness of the universe. So, youth asks, what's this business about suffering? Why is that good? Why is that? Thomas, the slow learner has so many more opportunities to watch the dynamics of love's play. If he is the most stubborn human in the history of the earth, he will have had the opportunity to see how shrewd love can be as love penetrates all his character armor. When the stubborn human finally falls in love, he will understand how hard the universe had to labor to finally win him. He will know something of the subtle arts of love. How protean, how untiring, how confident, how intelligent, how faithful, how boundless, How inflamed, how intuitive, how unitive, must be intuitive too, how irresistible love can be. Such stubborn humans become the world's greatest lovers, for they have been through an initiation that demanded many resources of love. They make themselves just as irresistible and as intelligent as love in drawing others into the joy of living. Aha, so hard won means they're going to be out there giving powerful calls of their own. Hooray! Well, maybe that's me. I think I must have been a slow learner. Oh, yes. Well, a subject for another show. On with youth. But this is so idealistic. I mean, fine, I like it, but I know what my father would say. It has nothing to do with the real world, business, and everything else. He's an accountant. How does any of this apply to an accountant? Thomas. During the last few centuries of the modern period, we tried to use the human as the locus of all meaning. By so doing, we have ruined our language. We can see this in the very word accountant. We think of an accountant as someone who keeps the books of a company, who keeps track of sales and inventory, watching over the bottom line of profits. Within that small world, it is difficult, if not impossible, to sense the involvement of self, earth, and cosmos. So in order to answer your question concerning the dynamic of love within the profession of accountancy, we need to tell the full story of the cosmos. To begin with, the earth is a corporation. It is the primary corporation. Any corporation created by humans must fit itself into the larger corporation of the earth. Because if the earth goes bankrupt, everything else falls to ruin. Furthermore, the earth has its own system of accounting, much more subtle and stringent than the human system of profit and loss. The earth keeps track of all energy exchanges, no matter how minute. The earth's books remember all materials used and all waste created in production. There is no carpet under which anything can be swept. All is counted and entered in the natural ledgers of the earth. Now, question this. What is an accountant in a human corporation within this larger context? Suppose a firm manufactures shoes of various types. An accountant would begin by realizing that everything required for production is provided by the earth. The leather is created by the animals. The dye is created by the mineral world. The sun and plants provide energy, and humans provide the intelligence that knits everything together. Even the motivations are provided by the earth. Craftspeople desire to exercise their skills, and humans in general deeply desire to be of use, to enter a community of abiding mutual relationships. Accountants would see themselves as essential to the whole process, creating procedures that enable the gifts of the animal, mineral, and human worlds to present themselves. They enhance the life process. If the corporation is well ordered, everyone's joy will blossom. For people purchasing the shoes will know the simple joy of wearing shoes of true quality. And those making the shoes will know the deep joy of living a life of worth. In the corporations of the future, accountants will know a new joy when they realize that their work enables the life of the entire bioregion to prosper. The overall vitality of the particular geographical region of the earth will be enhanced rather than degraded by the corporation's interactions with the sea, sunlight, air, life forms, and soil. Then the joy of the fish and grasses and soil communities will be added to the joy of humans. And all of this will be the way in which an accountant or any corporation executive enters into the dynamics of love. Youth. I see. This is a different way of... Thomas, when you take the story of the universe as your basic referent, all your thoughts and actions are different. Youth. So it's not just accountants. Thomas. All professions, all activity in the human world find their essential meaning in the context of the cosmic story. Youth. And everything's so fouled up now. Here we are on the verge of blowing up the earth. Why is it so bad? Why are we so violent? Why can't we just avoid all this suffering that we see everywhere? Are people ignorant of all this stuff you're talking about, or is it something else? And that's the end of the section called Our Destiny as Enchantment. And the next section is called evil from cosmic risk. So Brian is going to get into the darkness, the shadow. Where is it coming from that with all this possibility in the universe that we are dealing with evil? And he has some wonderful things to say. Well, he has wonderful things to say about everything. Oh, such a goner for Brian Swim. I almost hate to leave you, but how long can a person listen in one sitting? So, until the next time, with my heart wide open, my enchantment pulsing, my allurement underneath that, connecting me with the beginning and you, until the next time. That's all, folks.
Thank you for listening to theconversation.org, Making Sense of These Times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org, dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.